How bad was Caleb Williams' debut performance? Is it under question whether he can be an effective pocket passer in the NFL, given the number of sacks, batted balls, and limited completions that he did manage? Can you please compliment one aspect of his game that deserves crediting?
That's easy. I think the fact that he protected the football is the most important thing that happened. I mean, listen, you cannot take a 19-yard sack or whatever the length of that sack was. That was insane. I get it. You don't want him under pressure the whole time, but it seemed fairly obvious from what we saw in the preseason that what teams were going to do, try to keep him in the pocket and make him prove that he can be a pocket passer. That was sort of what they were going to do. And his best play of the game is when he got out of the pocket and he's sprinting to the right and he fires a ball to DJ Moore. We'll talk to DJ in a little bit, who made a spectacular catch on a really hard thrown, excellent pass on the run. That seems to be his skill. Problem is, everybody seems to understand that. So they're going to keep him in the pocket. They're going to make him prove that he can see over the offensive line and that he can complete passes and that he has enough height to be a pocket passer. He's got to get that part of it. He's just got to perform that element. And once he does, that will open up a lot of things for his game. But that is the way he is going to be defended. They're going to come after him. They got, you know, it's really interesting because we're sitting here talking about how bad the interior of their line is. You know, a week from now, we're going to be talking about how awful their tackles are because they got really good defensive ends that you're going to face down in Houston. And we'll get to that story. But, yeah, I think that Caleb still has much to prove. I think that this is almost like a tip. There's a reason that rookies, that whatever that statistic was, 0-14-1. And it's not just the team around them. I think they've improved the team around them, but they didn't improve that offensive line around him. So, I'll be nice about it and kind about it, but there is much to be learned and for him to prove in order for them to be successful, the Bears to be successful.
Well, a couple of the criticisms in the draft process were height. Yep. That was an issue. And the other one was that he holds on to the ball way too long. Two things that really stood out yesterday. I was surprised by the amount of batted balls. That actually, I was shocked by that. I really was, because that's not something you heard about at practice. I don't remember any Bears reporter telling us that his balls were being batted. I don't remember seeing that in the preseason games, that his balls were batted. And that was a big thing on Sunday. Now, the other thing is that he has gone out of his way to say that he wants to throw the ball more than running the ball himself. He did run the ball a couple. He may have to take off running more often if they're going to keep him in the pocket and leave a middle open for him.
He made a hell of a play in the fourth quarter
when he needed to. Yes. But yep, he might have to do that, you know, early and often, as we like to say. So those are some of the things. You know, his arm, he's got an electric arm. He might almost have too electric of the arm. Sometimes I thought it was hard for the receiver to catch the ball because he was putting so much velocity behind it.
Yeah, he was bad. It was a memorable day because it was his debut, but you wanted to forget it immediately. But he can't forget it because there's benefit in struggling like that. You always wonder about players. It's a cliche. How do you handle adversity? You'll learn a lot about Caleb Williams, about how he bounces back from this. And I think he will bounce back from this. I think two things can be true. You can agree that he was awful. And I think that, you know, the Bears need better from the quarterback position. Disappointing. And he disappointed a lot of people who had high expectations. It's got a long way to go. I also think you can still believe that he'll get there. He'll get there because of the way he handled it. The most impressive thing football-wise was that he protected the football and didn't create a turnover, didn't throw the ball. They were close, though. It was close. A couple passes. The other thing intangibly was that how he spoke about what he struggled with and how he understood what was wrong with his performance. There was no denial. There was nothing that said that he wasn't defensive. he invited the criticism and scrutiny and evaluation that he knows is going to be hard on him. He also compared it to one night in South Bend last October,
right,
where he struggled against that team in green and gold or blue and gold. He wouldn't say Notre Dame, Dustin. I know you probably appreciated that, but he struggled at Notre Dame when he was a USC quarterback, and that turned out to be the exception to the rule. And I think over time, his debut will be the exception to the rule. He'll get better. The batted passes was a surprise. His vision wasn't as clear and clean as I thought it would be, as we saw in preseason. I wondered about the role anxiety might have played. I asked Matt Eberflus about that after the game. They claimed that it wasn't an issue, but they have a long way to go before he is the kind of quarterback they expect him to be, but I do think he'll eventually get there.
These are the questions I cannot answer, right?
There's going to be questions we're going to have for Olin Kreutz. That's going to be at 7 o'clock. What is your biggest concern regarding the Bears' offensive line? Why do you think Nate Davis and Ryan Bates were rotating in and out during the game? Did you feel Davis was benched at one point? Who needs replacing more, Davis or Coleman Shelton?
It's a good question. I think that this whole preseason leading through game one, the Bears have been trying to send a message to Nate Davis that you need to be better. And you don't rotate a veteran that you have guaranteed all that money to against his former team unless you're trying to send him a message that you need to be better immediately. I know Ryan Bates was injured in preseason. Now he comes back. But I don't think that you are doing your offensive line or your offense in general a service. I think you're doing it a disservice by rotating linemen. You've got to pick five and go with it. Maybe you can get away with it. It's not ideal, though. You could talk me into understanding why there's value in that, but I don't really think I'm wholeheartedly in favor of that. I think Coleman Shelton was way too obvious for a center. I look forward to seeing what Olin Kreutz has to say at 7 o'clock about the job that Coleman Shelton did. I know what he did a lot of, and that was falling backward. That's not good for a center to be going in the opposite direction. You want to move the pile forward. You want to protect your quarterback. You can't just diagnose what the defensive line is doing and then get manhandled once you snap the ball. Bears offensive line came out of that game, I think, with the biggest number of problems from any position group, and they need to fix it pronto.
Well, this was the concern. As much of it, we talked about all the weapons that the Bears have added and Caleb Williams walking into a offense with all kinds of weapons. It's great to have weapons, but if you can't protect the quarterback and give the quarterback time to get to those weapons or block a little bit to take a little pressure off and run the damn ball. Here's the thing about the snaps, and I'd like to go back and I don't know if you can do this unless you watch it yourself. Maybe there's somewhere out there that, okay, I noticed all of a sudden that Ryan Bates was in, and I sent you guys a text, and I said, Bates in, Davis benched. Then looking at the final box score, Nate Davis, 18 snaps, 18 of 56 snaps. Ryan Bates, 38 snaps. I did the math, public school educated. So I don't know that that's a rotation. That's not like one series and another series. I think Nate Davis played about the first 18 snaps of the game, and then he got benched, and Nate Davis came in. So, Ebert, don't lie to me as a head coach.
That's not true, Dustin. I mean, they did a rotation.
Well, that's what I just said. I said I didn't notice a rotation because when I first noticed Ryan Bates, I noticed Ryan Bates the rest of the way.
Yeah, so they actually did, though. They brought Davis back, and then they brought Bates back. Because I was with you. I thought he got benched. And then I thought Bates got hurt or something. That's what I thought. And then he came back in. It was confusing until you found out from the post game that there was a rotation.
But 20 more snaps is quite a bit. It's a big difference for a rotation. And anyway, and this was another one of my big concerns going in. I mean, Shelton just got manhandled. Now, we talked pregame, and Mully, you brought it up in the first segment. Those guys inside for the Titans, really, really good. Yeah. And I can't wait to hear what Olin has to say at 7.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to tell you how good they are on the inside. And I'm not sure how many 400-pound defensive tackles that Shelton's going to face. But he also got steamrolled on a blitz where the guy ran literally over him.
Yeah.
And there was another play where he had no one to block. So he went to help out to triple team someone and a guy on a delayed blitz ran right past him on his way to the
quarterback. Such a great observation. Yes, so, I wrote that one down, too. I mean, just whiffed, Olaid.
Oh, I mean, you can't do that, man. You got to, you know, if think about football. If a guy is double-teamed on your right, you stay and you wait and you protect your area. You don't jump in. Hey, let's all block him. Because that's when they run past you and that's when you get in serious trouble. Listen, it was a bad performance by the offensive line, particularly the interior. Tevin Jenkins didn't have a good game. That's a really...
Fumble recovery.
That's a really... Okay, that was good. But that's a very tough line to face. It was really interesting because we talked in the pregame, Dan Pompey mentioned that the Titans were better on the line of scrimmage than the Bears. And my question was, well, how do you win a football game if you can't win the line of scrimmage? And he said 20 years ago, it's a good question, but things have changed to a point where you can now lose the line of scrimmage and win a football game. It's exactly what happened.
Bears did just that.
Over the course of that game.
And that's the big question,
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. That was Biggs time, 9 o'clock this morning. 9 for Biggs, 7 for Olin. Who was your most impressive defensive player for the Bears, and who was the most surprising? Or is that the same person? How much credit do you give Matt Eberflus for making adjustments at halftime and creating pressure in the second half of that ball game?
Well, I give Eberflus a ton of credit for that. Because I thought that they were, frankly, I thought they were finished in the first half. They're down 17 points. Great. They get a field goal at the end of the game. And I just thought to myself, they're not going to be able to score against this team. And they're in a hole. And I did not see the Bears stopping them the rest of the way. Because I felt like they were having serious problems, not just on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and I felt like they were blocked up pretty well in the first half of that game. That guy went to work, and he changed what they were doing, and they got a lot more pressure going, and all of a sudden they turned the tide in that game. And you know, even I'm not going to throw flowers at Shane Waldron, but at the end of the game when they couldn't run, they started throwing the ball outside. They started doing some things to attack the outside, and that's how they burned a lot of time and helped themselves put that game away. So
long handoffs.
It is definitely the defense that won the game for them. They did a great job. The coach did a great job. You know, we don't talk about linebacker play. Edwards had 15 tackles, 2 for loss. That's a lot of work to get done in a football game, and I thought he did a very good job of it. Obviously, when your second defensive end, who didn't even start, winds up with 2 sacks, that's pretty special. DeMarcus Walker was the guy that was wrapping up the quarterback when he made that insane, and don't tell me he was trying to throw it out of bounds. He was trying to make a pass to the receiver like he was Brett Favre or something, and that led to the pick 6.
So impressive wise for Daryl Taylor. I mean, the guy's got a motor that just does not stop. So that was impressive. And it's not the same for surprising. And I know I kind of went off on a tangent about this last week about the captain. You know, Montez Sweat is only negative things that at least get pointed out in the game. You know, he had a bad offsides penalty. I think the series you missed him, I guess, the series they scored the touchdown on when they were really running the ball in the first in this down their throat, he was out in the tent getting looked at. He didn't do, and then when it was obvious passing situations, like he was not the guy applying the pressure. So I was disappointed. I was disappointed in Sweat. And maybe they were giving him extra attention, but I Taylor was awesome. Walker was really good. And again, TJ Edwards, a guy that just flying to the ball. I mean, he just is a tackling machine. The guy's excellent. I think he's now part of the afternoon show. He's going to be on Tuesday with those guys.
Matt Eberflus really made some adjustments at halftime, and you can give him credit directly because he is also the de facto defensive signal caller or defensive coordinator. So when he talks about the defensive changes at halftime, he and Eric Washington collaborated or whatever, but they made the right moves. They adjusted to how they stopped the run. Titans were less than successful in the second half. Sure. And also how to get to Will Levis, because they kept coming with pressure. When you see how often Will Levis was pressured yesterday, you know that he spent the entire day out of rhythm, out of time. For a young quarterback like that, you just keep coming because you expect him to throw you the football. And guess what? He did. So Tyrique Stevenson would be the most impressive defensive player because he made the most impressive defensive play, the difference maker. When you score the game-winning touchdown on defense, you earn that right to be called the most impressive defensive player. Good for Tyrique Stevenson, who basically just caught the ball and ran. But he was in coverage. He was in the right place at the right time. Hard. It's impossible.
Gave up a touchdown earlier in the game and kind of made up for it.
Came back from that. Tell you what, Calvin Ridley's a good,
Holy God.
Receiver. Yeah. It's still at this stage of his career, given what he has been through.
Yeah.
His career, he's a guy that was a good pickup for them. But Darrell Taylor, you can't be help but be impressed. They got him 2 weeks ago or so, and he's had two sacks and a strip sack fumble. TJ Edwards flying around. I thought the Bears were too easy to block at times. I think Tremaine Edmonds was Velcro a couple running plays. But Tyrique Stevenson, right place, right time, and really that's how you recover from getting beat earlier in the game. You make the play of the game later.
Oh, that's a good question.
DJ Moore, 8 o'clock with Mully and Haw. Based on week one results, how do you view the NFC North division now? How much did the Bears' performance factor into this thinking?
Well, I have to say the Bears did what they needed to do. They held serve and they survived in advance, if you will, because that's what you're looking at. You're looking at trying to just not do anything to make your season outlook any different. And as we sit here this morning on a Bears Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority, the Bears outlook looks the same as it did before the game. They've got a shot. Legitimate playoff contenders. Meanwhile, in Green Bay, they're worried. They're worried.
They should be.
As they should be. You have your starting quarterback with an MCL problem. His next 4 to 6 weeks, your next month is uncertain. Your season is up for grabs. The Titans may have gotten rid of the wrong quarterback, but we'll see what Malik Willis is made of. The Packers have problems. The Lions, they're for real. Anybody that stayed up and watched David Montgomery will that team to a victory in overtime has to be impressed by what the Lions have to offer. You don't have to be that aspirational as a Bears fan. You can finish second and still feel very good about where you are in that division. Oh, but by the way, you might want to notice Sam Darnold, nobody told him he was done. Nobody told him that he was irrelevant and discarded and left for nothing, because he completed his first 12 passes. He's in an offense that really plays to his strengths, and he's got Justin Jefferson on his side. Vikings beat the Giants, so you don't want to ignore that either. But I think the Bears have to feel very good about where they are in the division. You don't like bad things to happen to teams, but the Packers, they're in trouble.
All right, before you make Skull Viking your ringtone, David, they were playing the Giants, okay? So let's just keep that in mind. Let's see, week one overreaction. Let's see what week two.
Skull Viking.
I mean, but listen, they won, and that's the name of the game. They won. They won the game. That knee injury looked awful. It looked like both sides of his knees popped. They had some stuff on social media zoomed in, and it was like pop back and forth. I mean, I don't think he plays for 4 weeks, if again. I mean, it looked really. They're also interested in Ryan Tannehill, the Packers.
They should be,
right? So, I mean, if you're doing that kind of shopping, and you know the thing about the Lions, okay, they won the game, but they were at home. They're a Super Bowl. They're a team.
Rams pretty good, buddy. Rams are good.
Well, that might be the other part of this. Like, is that a potential like NFC championship game matchup?
Matthew Stafford was cooking. He was looking very, very strong.
And they did that without Puka. He got out early with an injury. So, listen, Bears are tied for first place. 0-1. What could be better?
I mean, the biggest takeaway from the division is that Jordan Love got hurt, and they're saying it's 3 to 6 weeks, and they like the quarterbacks they have, and they're going to coach them up, and they're not going to sign anybody else off the street. That's what they say. 3 to 6 weeks, man. It doesn't take that long to figure out that you're in serious trouble, and I think they're in serious trouble. And the sad reality is, we talked about this before the season began, that one of those two teams, be it Detroit or the Green Bay Packers, something bad had to happen. We actually had that conversation. You need one of those things. And you don't cheer for injury and you want to beat guys straight up and all that stuff. But if they can fall into a little bit of a hole here, that's huge for the Bears.
Changes the way you look at it.
It changes the way you look at it. It changes your season. You know, go back and look. There's a statistic out there. When you start the season 0-2, you are in serious trouble. You got to, unless you got Emmitt Smith and he's holding out and then he's going to come back and you're going to win the Super Bowl, I think it's a problem. You got a serious problem starting 0-2. And there are some teams out there. I wonder what Atlanta feels like now because they lost a game and now they got to play in at Philly, not nationally televised game at night. Not a really good follow up to what was going on in your opener. So I just think the Packers are in a little bit of trouble here, and I think it's a glorious and wondrous thing to witness. And you're right, David. I thought I was surprised by Minnesota. They played very well, and they won. And, of course, Detroit wins in overtime against a good team. It was interesting.
It's an interesting question, I think.
Are the Cubs still alive after losing a series to the Yankees? Will they remain so if they lose the series at the Dodgers? Why are they struggling to score even in yesterday's 2-1 loss?
Boy, that's the same old, isn't it? They score two runs in the series. You're not going to win a lot of series when you score two runs, but it's almost a miracle they won a game with two runs in three games. But look, we knew that the Yankees were good. We knew there was a chance they could lose this series, and now they got the Dodgers, and the same problem exists. So are they done? No, they're not done. Where there is life, there is hope. But they look like they're pretty much on gas. It doesn't look very good. The offense is so weird. They had this explosion of runs in these series, and I know they didn't play great teams, but they had there were a couple of good pitchers in there, and they scored a ton of runs. And then they come home and they struggle to score runs. It's weird. It's just really weird that you come home and you have these problems. Maybe going back on the road, maybe they'll get 70 runs against the Dodgers.
and maybe not, right? I mean, there's an unbelievable pitching matchup on Tuesday night. We'll talk about that more later in the week, the Dodgers and Cubs. But, you know, 9-10 start, so I don't know how much Cubs baseball will be seen live anyway over the next couple of days, if at all. You know, I can answer it like Craig Counsell. That's baseball. You know what you need? You need a superstar in the middle of the lineup. But the Yankees didn't exactly dominate other than winning two of the three games. I mean, you know, they're sluggers. They're two great guys. 3-for-19 combined in three games. Cubs scored two runs.
Cut them. And
somehow managed.
Bench them.
No, we're going to talk about cutting people in a second. You could have easily won that series if you had any kind of offense at all. Because the Cubs pitching was pretty solid against that formidable Yankee lineup.
But this is what a World Series contender looks like.
They look the
sluggers
part.
Off weekends, and their pitching carries the day. That's how you win. That's why they're in the midst of a race in the AL East. That's why they're going to be likely playing deep into October. The Cubs beat Gerrit Cole, but they lost the other two games. Are you kidding me? So two runs in three games isn't going to cut it, especially on a weekend where, hey, Cub fans, you turned out the Bears opener. I was wrong. I thought there'd be 30,000 people or less yesterday. That a crowd of 39,000 for the Cubs Hall of Fame induction with Kerry Wood and Aramis Ramirez. It was a great weekend at Wrigley Field. The baseball didn't back up the enthusiasm, and it wasn't warranted. The Yankees are who they are. Great tribute to Anthony Rizzo. Great to see Riz back in town. He handled that like you would expect him to. He said all the right things. That was a very special weekend. The Cubs, five games out with 19 to play. They're done.
That's just baseball, unfortunately.
This one will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Do we really have to do this one? How in the world can Notre Dame be ranked ahead of Northern Illinois after the Huskies beat the Irish in South Bend on Saturday? Speaking of that monumental victory, how could Notre Dame let that happen?
It's a great question. They're asking all over South Bend and all over Notre Dame bars and living rooms across America, what is Marcus Freeman doing? What was he thinking? Why were they unprepared? Also, give Carrick credit. I mean, that you can focus on that if you're a Notre Dame fan. If you're a college football fan, certainly a son of the Mid-American Conference, you are looking at Thomas Hammack with a lot of respect and admiration. Great coaching job. The moment of those young men's lives from a football perspective was experienced on Saturday in South Bend. Northern Illinois did everything right. They seized the day. They celebrated like they knew it was going to be the highlight of their football careers. That was the biggest victory in Northern Illinois history. Good for them. I don't know why Notre Dame is still in the top 25. They certainly didn't play like a team that deserved to be ranked 18th. They plummeted, though. From 5 to 18 is quite a fall. I'm focused on Northern Illinois being 25th. Back in the top 25. They deserve all of that. I can't wait to talk to Thomas Hammack tomorrow on the program. They deserve all the attention they're going to receive.
8:25, Thomas Hammack will join you guys on Tuesday. 8:25, Thomas Hammack. Scooby-Dooby-Doo, NIU, with the upset of the year at the very least. Remember the scene in the movie Rudy where the players go into the coach's office and they give the jersey to the coach and say, let Rudy take my spot?
Yeah.
Here's what should have happened after the game.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Marcus Freeman should have taken the three-quarter zip off,
yeah,
and he should have walked into the athletic director of the priest's office, and he should have handed him the three-quarter zip, and he should have walked away into the night. That should have been the end.
Or a priest's office.
Yeah. That should have been the end of it.
Here you go.
How about the confessional?
Yeah.
There aren't enough Hail Marys he can do between now and next Saturday to make it up.
From a football perspective, what were they thinking with Riley Leonard? I know it's only two games, and you're not supposed to criticize college players. He's a professional quarterback, though. He makes $2 million.
He is?
Well, he's paid like one.
NIU made $1.4 million to go in and beat Notre Dame. How about that?
That's what I was going to say. Not only did you lose to him, you paid him to come and beat you. Look, God bless Northern Illinois. I know a lot of people who went there. I got a lot of friends. I had some fun going up there when I was in school. And it's great. I mean, it's wonderful to have that moment. But honest to God, Marcus Freeman, whatever you want to say about the guy, they were a 28-point favorite in that game, okay? If you had bet $100 straight up on that team, you'd have won $1,800. That's how ridiculous it was to lose that game. It's mind-boggling to me that you can go to Texas A&M, you can be as composed as they were, and you can win a football game in that environment, and then you can come home and apparently not prepare for what is a classic college trap game.
Classic.
If ever there was a moment, you've got to be able to get through to your guys that, hey, we may be ranked high, but they're going to play the game of their lives. This is their I mean, oh my God, I could give you the speech. I could write it down for you. And I'm not saying he didn't make that attempt, but I'm guessing that in his heart he felt exactly as they played. Like, this is just a
flat, listless. They ignored.
Unbelievable.
Right. This was NIU's playoff game. This was their college football national championship game. They treated it like that. Notre Dame shrugged. They shrugged.
Atlas Shrugged.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo, NIU.
What the hell is that? That's not a thing.
Yes, it is a thing.
Is it?
My aunt graduated from there.
Come on, Shaggy.
I got a,
really?
They're part of one of my five. I've got a college credit from NIU, too.
That's a 1940s cheer? Is that what you're telling me?
My aunt's not that old.
Hit him in the knee.
I don't think they had Scooby-Doo.
I had like a sweatshirt when I was a kid of like an NI that it's a dog. It's a husky, right?
Yeah, it's
and
a husky.
I think the sweatshirt said Scooby Dooby Doo NIU.
Wow.
You're beautiful.
It's awesome.
That's beautiful. I didn't know that. So we're
chant it proudly this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was trying to reach my Australian aunt who was on a cruise and she didn't have Wi-Fi on the boat, so I couldn't reach her to let her know that the upset of the century had just happened.
That was very noble of you, given your state of mind after Notre Dame choked.
The fact that I had to send that email out,
yes.
You know how hard it was to send? You know how many text messages I got?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
My phone was just, and my basic answer was, there aren't enough Michelob Ultras.
Oh, so awesome. You know, I'm on one of those text lines, right, with my brothers who both went to Notre Dame and two of our friends who went to Northern Illinois. We're roommates there, and it was so much fun.
Oh, that's fun.
Just the back and forth. And my eldest brother, who takes this stuff serious as a heart attack, is about done with getting all these kind of things that are out there. Anything that was remotely kind of insulting was sent to him.
The meme with Rudy in an NIU jacket.
All right, we got the extra point. It's a great one. We'll be right back. Mully and Haw, The Score.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo, NIU.